Abbreviated musical introduction. Welcome to One Land, Many Voices. I'm William Seaman, and with me in the studio is Hala Gores. Good morning, Hala.
Good morning, Will, and good morning to our listeners.
And also, we're in the studio with us this morning, a very special guest, one of two guests that we're going to be hearing from this morning, Professor Joel Bainan.
Good morning, Will. Good morning, Hala.
Good morning, Dr. Bainan. Let me go ahead and move forward to introductions. I will let our listeners know before we get started that we do have Dr. Marvin Kaiser on the line, and he may participate in the first half of the program, or he may wait until the second half of the program. Also, before I proceed, I should let our listeners know that in light of the topic this morning, I should disclose that I sit on the advisory board for the Middle East Studies Center at PSU. That said, Dr. Joel Bainan is a professor of Middle East history at Stanford University in California. He has been on leave from Stanford over the last 2 years and was serving as Director of Middle East Studies and Professor of History at the American University in Cairo. Joel Bainan is author or editor on many books, most recently Workers and Peasants in the Modern Middle East. His articles have been published in leading scholarly journals as well as The Nation, Middle East Report, The Los Angeles Times, The Jordan Times, Le Monde Diplomatique, and many other news publications. And he's appeared on Al Jazeera TV, BBC Radio, National Public Radio, providing commentary and analysis for television and radio audiences throughout the world. In 2002, he served as president of the Middle East Studies Association of North America. Professor Joel Bainan, thank you for joining us this morning.
You're most welcome. It's my pleasure.
And today we will be talking about academic freedom and specifically about the case that the recent Willamette Week article described as a skirmish at PSU. That article by Willamette Week reporter Beth Slovic appears in the November 19th edition. It's available online. The basic situation is that Portland State University's Department of History had a position open, I believe it's still open, and Professor Joel Bainan had applied for the job and had arrived here in Portland for the interviews. Perhaps we can dive right into the question of academic freedom by jumping to Professor Bainan's message communicating his decision to withdraw his name from consideration for the position at PSU. Here is that message. Professor Bainan writes, "Dear Ken, regretfully, I feel I have no choice but to withdraw my name from consideration for the modern Middle East position. I appreciate very much your willingness to protest to the dean regarding Michael Weingrad's words to me at our breakfast meeting, but a protest to someone who already has a record of even more egregious disregard for academic freedom can't begin to address the problem. If Michael Weingrad's comments were the only issue, it would not be of major concern to me. I am quite sure he had no idea that what he said was inappropriate. In fact, we got on rather well, and I wouldn't be surprised if he came away from our meeting well disposed towards me. Much more serious, as I told you on the phone, is that Tom Luckett asked me a highly inappropriate political question during my private meeting with him. He, too, was unaware of the impropriety of this line of discussion, and when I mentioned, as lightheartedly as I could, to Marvin Kaiser, that I had been politically vetted by Michael Weingrad, his response was, 'Of course.' It appears, then, that at all levels at PSU, there is a serious lack of appreciation for academic freedom. This is especially unfortunate for a public institution. It is obvious that despite the improprieties, which are a matter of public knowledge, although it has not yet reached the media, regarding the possibility of my joining the PSU faculty last year, insufficient measures were taken to ensure a fair and professional process this year, despite my initial willingness to give PSU a second chance. Under these circumstances, my further participation in this process can only signal that I regard it as legitimate, and it is not. I sincerely hope that PSU will set to work at repairing its deeply flawed institutional culture. Until it does, I will urge my colleagues to exercise the greatest caution before considering applying for or accepting a position at PSU. Yours truly, Joel Bainan. That is the message, and this was sent to the department chair in charge of the hiring process at PSU?
Not to the department chair, to the chair of the search committee. The department chair is Tom Luckett.
So, Dr. Bainan, there are at least three players at Portland State University that your letter references. One is Michael Weingrad, Tom Luckett, and Dean Marvin Kaiser. As I have said, we'll be speaking with Dean Kaiser further along in this program. Can you provide our listeners a little bit of background and an explanation of what's going on? Why would such a distinguished professor take such a drastic step?
Well, first of all, despite the fact that there are a lot of good things in the article, and I very much appreciate Beth Slovic's willingness to take a chance and write it, the article misses a very important premise. About a year ago, when I was still in Cairo, I was approached by several faculty members at PSU who knew that I was going to be coming back from Cairo at the end of the academic year. And they asked me, would I be willing to take a regular tenured position to replace John Mandeville, who is the modern Middle East historian at PSU and who is retiring at the end of this academic year. So the initial proposal was not that I come to visit, but that I simply replace John Mandeville without a national search. Now, that kind of procedure is fairly common in major research universities. It's happened maybe a dozen times since I've arrived at Stanford 25 years ago. It's not very common at an institution like PSU. However, the history department discussed the matter. There was a vote in the department, and the vote was strongly in favor of doing this. And then several colleagues, including the chair of the history department and others, went to Dean Kaiser and asked for permission to go ahead and make this appointment. And after consulting with representatives of the Jewish community, who, in fact, we should be clear, do not represent the opinions of the majority of Jews, not in Portland or anywhere else, after consulting with these people, Dean Kaiser said no. At that point, the chair of the history department came to me and said, well, this isn't going to happen, and would you be willing to come and visit? And I said, okay, not for the year, because I would have to resign my position at Stanford if I stayed away for that long, but for the fall quarter, I could have done that. And at the end of the day, it turns out that the state of Oregon's bureaucratic procedures are such that if I would have been employed for a full time for one semester at PSU, they would call that employed for one-third time over the year, and therefore I wouldn't get medical benefits. And PSU didn't want to pay for my medical benefits, so in the end, that's what made it impossible for me to come to visit. But the main point to underline here is that even before we began to talk about what's in the Willamette Week article, according to at least five faculty members of the of PSU who told me after the fact, Dean Kaiser had already nixed my initial appointment as a result of speaking with representatives of the Jewish community.
So this was maybe the first round in a process that, at least from your point of view, was compromised by these political concerns that should never have been a part of the hiring process.
That's right. We began the second time around. I had grave reservations about applying a second time around, because when I returned from Cairo and I spoke with several people at PSU who told me more or less what had happened, some differences over the details, but the broad outlines of the story are in agreement. And I wasn't convinced, actually, that PSU was able to do a proper professional job the second time around. But I very much wanted to be at PSU and in Portland for several reasons. First, Stanford does not deal with the modern Middle East in any substantial way. For most of the time that I've been there, I've been the only person on the campus. PSU has a long-standing commitment to the modern Middle East. Its Middle East Study Center is one of the oldest in the country. It's one of the original federally funded Middle East Study Centers. And there are lots of colleagues there who work on the modern Middle East, some of whom I've known for quite a long time. Secondly, I like very much the city of Portland as a just quality of life place to live. And thirdly, I have family in Portland and elsewhere in Oregon as well. So for all of those reasons, I was willing to take a chance and apply a second time.
Dr. Bainan, you've mentioned the external political forces or influences placed on a university and how inappropriate that is. I think what's missing from that dialogue is the financial aspect of it. For example, we know that the Judaic Studies at Portland State University received $1 million from the Schnitzer family to start Judaic Studies. That's a terrific thing. They then received $1.5 million from another individual. It is a well-funded program. Do you believe that played any impact in the decisions that were made regarding your how to handle your interview process?
I have no firsthand knowledge that it did or didn't. Several people have told me, people who should know, that it did. But we don't need to go to things that I can't prove one way or the other. We can go to what's on the record. In principle, my political opinions about whatever should have nothing to do with whether or not I am qualified to be hired at Portland State or anywhere else. As a matter of fact, more than half of my major published work has nothing to do with Israel and Palestine. Primarily, I'm a historian of modern Egypt. More broadly, workers, peasants, minorities in the Middle East. I've written quite a great deal about that, and there is really no reason why anybody in the Jewish community of Portland or anywhere else should care about that one way or the other. People who work on the Middle East, on the modern Middle East, have been under intense attack since the establishment of the Campus Watch organization, which has been in a neo-McCarthyite fashion targeting professors whose opinions they don't like. That is to say, almost all professors, because there are hardly any professors whose opinions they do like. So Portland State's administration surely knew this. There is a branch of Campus Watch on campus. It has an office in the building next to the history department, I was told by a student when I did the interview. So knowing that this situation of tension exists, it would have been professionally prudent to make sure that no undue influence over the search process would have been brought to bear. And instead, what all the relevant parties acknowledge is that Dean Kaiser went out and sought the opinions of people in the Jewish community. He didn't go out and seek the opinions of people in the Arab community or the Muslim community. And in any case, essentially what he was doing, whether he knew it or not, was inviting pressure to be put on him. So rather than set up a kind of firewall to prevent that pressure from being brought to bear, he essentially invited it in.
I wonder if we could go back to the questions in this latest interview process that you considered that you described as a kind of a political vetting. I think this is something maybe our listeners, first of all, the whole process of an academic hiring like this is probably not something in the experience of most of our listeners, certainly isn't in mine. What kind of questions came up that you felt were inappropriate for the hiring process?
Okay, so the Willamette Week article incorrectly says that I claim that two professors asked me my political views on Israel. That's not exactly what happened. I had breakfast with Michael Weingrad and another member of the PSU faculty, and it was a rather intense, but up until a certain point, proper discussion that ranged across the fact that we are both from Philadelphia, and we discussed at great length Hebrew novels and many things relating to Israel and so on. And towards the end of the conversation, he said to me, I just wanted to make sure that you weren't going to turn Portland State into San Francisco State or something like that. Now, for people who don't know, San Francisco State University is the first major institution in the country to have an ethnic studies department. That happened in 1969. There has been a long history of tension over that department, including very intense clashes between the Jewish community and the Arab American community and claims of anti-Semitism and so on. And there has indeed been some expressions of anti-Semitism at San Francisco State. But the premise of what Michael Weingrad says is ridiculous. I couldn't have turned Portland State University into San Francisco State University in this respect, even had I wanted to, which I certainly would not want to do. But he essentially admitted to me that he was there to check my political positions or my political inclinations. That's not okay. It doesn't matter that what I teach is a controversial topic. It doesn't matter that my opinions may not be beloved of some people. My political opinions or the political opinions of any professor ought to have nothing to do with their qualifications to be hired. Moreover, I've won a Dean's Award for Distinguished Teaching at Stanford University. Do they think that I would have gotten that award if what I had been doing was using my position as a professor to try to politically indoctrinate my students? That would never have been okay with Stanford's administration, which is apparently quite a lot more professional than Portland State's.
You've mentioned Michael Weingrad several times. He is chair of the Judaic Studies Department at Portland State University.
It's a program. It's an interdisciplinary program, not a department.
Thank you for correcting me on that. Why would a professor being interviewed for a history position be scheduled to meet with Dr. Michael Weingrad?
You know, I didn't personally find that a problem in and of itself. I did find it a problem that if they had scheduled that interview, they didn't schedule an interview for me to meet with anyone from the Middle East Studies Center. Michael Weingrad could say that insofar as some of my teaching and research is about Israel, that he would have an interest in it, a legitimate academic interest, and I would have no objection to that. But since they didn't schedule an interview with anyone representing the Middle East Studies Center, which is the institution on campus outside of the history department, which I would have felt the greatest affinity for, that struck me as odd.
Now, one of the things that you see, for example, in the comments to the Willamette Week article are a lot of folks writing and saying, why isn't it appropriate that a university should be concerned about hiring a professor who can't be dispassionate and objective about these issues? He's going to indoctrinate the student body. Why isn't this a legitimate question? Or other questions which I'd like to get to, and again, to be specific, maybe you could first go to another example from this interview that you considered an inappropriate question, and go into a little more depth on why this is inappropriate. What is it? What's the stake for academic freedom here?
If there was a reasonable claim that I had, in the course of my career, behaved inappropriately in the classroom, used the classroom regularly to indoctrinate students or to push political point of view or graded in a prejudicial manner or anything like that, absolutely, it would have been legitimate to put that into consideration. But that no one made claims like that except for a little bit crazy right-wing websites who don't actually have any evidence to the case. The claims were that my political opinions, which generally speaking haven't been characterized correctly anyway, I deeply dislike the notion of pro-Israel, pro-Palestine. I've always refused to call myself pro-Palestinian or anything like that. my political opinions have first of all been characterized incorrectly, and then it is alleged that because I have these extreme political opinions, which in Israel, for example, are not considered extreme, therefore I must be doing all these bad things. But there's absolutely no evidence that I had done any of those things. In fact, there's lots of evidence to the contrary. I've always been a very popular and effective teacher. As to the second question, what else was said? I met, as was appropriate, with Tom Luckett, the chair of the history department, and we had a pretty reasonable discussion in general, and then at one point he asked me, why doesn't the Jewish community like you? And to which I said, I think that's an inappropriate political question. And he responded, okay. He says, well, once I've made the point that I think it's inappropriate, I'll be happy to answer the question. And I went on to explain why it is that official institutions of the Jewish community get especially upset when people like me, who are absolutely committed to being Jewish and have good Jewish credentials, fluent in Hebrew, family living in Israel, don't say that everything that Israel does is just peachy keen.
You know, I am asking too much to want an institution to have a firewall between the political and financial influences on the institution and the administration and academic hiring. Am I asking too much?
No, that's in fact the standard. And if you ask the Association of American University Professors, which is professionally engaged in establishing standards, they would say, yeah, that's right. That's what should be the case. Now, we know, of course, in the real world, it's not always 100% the case. It's not right, it's not good, but a little bit of adjustment and so on. But in this case, Barton State simply went out and invited intervention, and they should have been able to predict what that intervention would have resulted in.
Are there specific, I mean, when I think of the kind of firewall that Hala mentions, I think of the not entirely effective, but at least in principle, the firewall between the government of the United Kingdom and the BBC. It's a government-funded institution, but there are structural features that are intended, we don't know if they always succeed, but intended to prevent intervention, prevent the kind of control and conditioning of the news that should and ought to frighten us about connections between. Are there structural features, for example, institutional features in the Stanford process of hiring that attempt to prevent that kind of influence from corrupting the process?
Yes. First, I think it's a good analogy to the BBC government of the United Kingdom situation, even though I think we do know that it doesn't always work 100%. At Stanford and at most other universities about which I have any information, it's very clear. Donors who want to establish a program or fund a chair or anything like that will discuss with representatives of the university the scope of the thing and so on, but they do not get to have any say whatsoever about the academic content of the program or the chair that they fund. So, for example, Stanford has recently established the Abbasi program in Islamic studies, and the Abbasi family has given a good chunk of money for it, but they don't get to say who is and isn't hired as a professor affiliated with the program. They don't get to say who's invited to give various guest lectures. They don't get to say which members of the Stanford faculty who already exist get to be affiliated with the program. None of that. And that's entirely proper. Now, they have their opinions on those matters, and the administrators know their opinions on those matters. And in principle, they should politely keep those opinions at arm's length.
Yeah, but could you imagine, for example, a dean at Stanford making a phone call or two in light of a hiring process and just as a matter of courtesy? I think that was the phrase that was used in the Willamette Week article.
I can imagine it happening. It's certainly improper.
Okay.
You're listening to One Land, Many Voices, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge. You may also go to streaming audio at KBOO's website, www.kboo.fm. It's time for us to move on to Dr. Marvin Kaiser joining us. Now, Dr. Kaiser has been listening to this interview and was offered the opportunity to participate. Initially, he has chosen to wait for the second half of the hour. Dr. Marvin Kaiser is Dean of College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and Professor of Sociology at Portland State University here in Portland. He also serves as the Executive Director for the Society for Values in Higher Education. Dr. Kaiser received his BA in philosophy from Cardinal Glennon College, St. Louis, Missouri, in 1961. He received an MA degree in sociology from Kansas State University and a MSW from the University of Kansas. He received his PhD in sociology from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln in 1979. Dr. Kaiser has been the recipient of several awards and honors. He received the Kansas State University Outstanding Undergraduate Teaching Award in 1979. He was honored as the Flint Hill Social Worker of the Year in 1983, and he received as a W.K. Kellogg National Fellow from 1985. Sorry, he served as a W.K. Kellogg National Fellow from 1985 to 1988. As the author of numerous articles, books, book chapters, and monographs, Dr. Kaiser has focused his scholarly efforts on domestic and international aging issues and community service. Good morning, Dr. Kaiser.
Good morning, Hala.
Dr. Kaiser, yes, thank you very much for joining us. You're familiar with the concerns raised by Professor Bainan. What's your response to his contention that the hiring process in this case, and indeed the institutional culture at PSU more broadly, is deeply flawed?
Well, I have no evidence that it's that the process is flawed or that it violates any standards of academic freedom. I've been dean here for almost 15 years. I've hired hundreds of individuals. I make it a point, whenever possible, and I try to do this all the time, to interview candidates for all the tenure line positions, at least, that we hire at the university. So I'm involved in those, and I can say that I've never had anyone either challenge me or the university in terms of any violations of academic freedom. So to suggest that the process or the culture is flawed, I don't have any evidence of that.
Dr. Kaiser, I'm confused by that comment, and the reason I'm confused by it is that it is my understanding that when Dr. Bainan was approved by the history department, you indicated to the then chair of the history department that you could not give her an answer about whether Dr. Bainan would join PSU, even temporarily, until you've had a chance to talk to Jordan Schnitzer, a big donor to PSU. So it flies in the face of the comment that there's no evidence that the process is flawed. If, in fact, you had to wait until Jordan Schnitzer was available to you to make a decision.
Well, first of all, let me say that is simply incorrect. Mr. Schnitzer or anyone else has never been consulted about whether or not we should hire any faculty member at this institution, and certainly was not the case in this instant. If I may, I want to review a little bit of the process as I was involved in it. As Professor Bainan suggested in what he said, several faculty came to me about the possibility of hiring Dr. Bainan for a tenure track position back last winter or spring. Two things that I'd comment on that. Number one is we are not in the habit at Portland State of hiring positions without a search. As a public institution, that has been essentially our stance. So when I said that I was not open to doing that at that point, that was the one issue. The second one was that we generally here at Portland State over the years do not get additional money for positions. So when we hire a position, when a position's open and we recruit for that position, that is generally a replacement position, is the terminology we would use. And that was to be the case here. And there was a longtime, a wonderful professor in the history department who was considering retirement. But at the time that this group of individuals came to see me about simply, let's just hire Dr. Bainan without a search, the faculty member had not retired. So I did not have a position. At that point, it was not communicated to me that a position was available. Now, subsequent to that, the faculty member has made that decision. And that was the basis then on which we opened up the position for a national search for the permanent replacement.
So let me get back to the crux of this issue about outside influence. Can you let our listeners know what your position is on what you sought out from the Jewish Federation of Portland and from George Schnitzer?
When it became known, and I have no idea how that came to pass, that there was the possibility that as this group of individuals had suggested, that we simply hire someone without a national search. I had several individuals call me and actually wanted to come to visit with me from various parts of the university and from outside the university. We are a public institution. We work with advisory boards, obviously. Kala, you mentioned your own role.
Yes.
So we seek, I mean, if people want to have a conversation with us, I do not believe it would be appropriate for us to say, no, you can't talk to us. So people came, talked to me. I did not seek them. They came to talk to me. But in each case, I do, as we've always done, I note to people what we mean by academic freedom, and I simply quote, the university can determine for itself, based on academic grounds, among four items. The first one is who can teach. It's our both responsibility and authority who determine who can teach, not outside forces based on political views or anything else. Now, one of the other things that I'm quite proud about at Portland State during my years as tenure, actually two things around this particular agenda. The Middle East Studies program, I think as some of you know, and as Dr. Bainan talked about, has had very distinguished past here at Portland State University beginning in 1959. Portland State had made a major commitment to Middle East studies. Well, as the years went on and the various budget cuts that happened at this institution, the Middle East Studies program suffered some losses and went into some decline in terms of number of faculty that we had available to be part of the program, that sort of thing. I have personally taken upon myself to lead much of that effort to rebuild the Middle East Studies program. Along with that, and I'm very happy to say that we also built during this period of time the Judaic Studies program.
Dean Kaiser, can I follow up on just this point? You mentioned that
Who's speaking, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Will Seaman,
okay,
the co-host of the program.
Sure.
Dean Kaiser, you mentioned that groups from the community, of course, are welcome. I mean, I don't think anybody has questioned the right of different community organizations to contact you or anybody else at PSU to get their views known. But having been approached by these particular organizations in the community and individuals, didn't you feel as the dean in this position that you had an obligation to contact other community organizations to get a broad kind of picture, a balanced view, if you will, in terms of this hiring process?
Well, I would think that would be the case if there were political considerations or other kinds of considerations. There were not. I want to assure you, Will, of that. There were not. This was, as Dr. Bainan suggested, we hire people based on their academic credentials and their goodness of fit with how the job description is defined. That's what we look at. So we don't turn this into a political interviewing process. I have no intention of that. I don't do that. We don't do that.
Well, now, yet these questions that were raised and the conversations that Dr. Bainan experienced in this last interview process, do you at least consider those questions and those comments inappropriate? I mean, didn't they, from your standpoint, constitute something that was inappropriate in the hiring process?
Well, this is the first time that I've heard those comments. I have sought those out, particularly with the head of the Judaic Studies program, as to what the nature of the conversation was. And I can say I received a different interpretation from the head of the program. So if I'm answering your question, if there were politically inappropriate comments or questions asked, yes, that's inappropriate. But I don't, independently, at least when I talk to the head of the Judaic Studies program, I do not have the same interpretation of that set of that breakfast.
Well, let me put that to Dr. Bainan then. Dr. Bainan, it sure sounds as though they're calling into question the truth of what you experienced and what you've just told us about.
Well, as a matter of fact, it's not about what I say happened, because as Dean Kaiser knows, he received an email from Ken Luckett, the chair of the search committee, protesting what was said at the breakfast meeting. I did not initiate that protest. That protest came from the history department. Ken Luckett called me up on the phone to apologize, sent me an email, and copied me on the email that he sent to Dean Kaiser. So before I did anything whatsoever, there was already the sense, at least among certain people in the history department, including the chair of the search committee, that something inappropriate had happened. And it was only after I was informed by people in the history department that they thought that something inappropriate had happened, that I considered everything that had happened that day and came to the conclusion that Portland State wasn't going to be any better the second time around than it had been the first. We should go back a little bit to what Dean Kaiser alleges happened last year as well. Because that's a little bit different from my understanding. When I was approached by faculty members at Portland State about my willingness to join the faculty about a year ago, they told me, John Mandeville, my immediate counterpart at Portland State and the professor who teaches the modern Middle East, is going to retire as of June 2009. And we proposed to go to the dean and say, John Mandeville is going to retire. Joel Bainan is willing to come and join the faculty. The issue here is an overlap of the two of them for 1 year, and in fact not all of 1 year because John Mandeville has been on leave for part of this 1 year. So that was on the table from day one, that those were going to be the circumstances. And I didn't invent that. That's how it was put to me before it was even discussed by the history department, before anybody went to Marvin Kaiser to talk about it. Secondly, Dean Kaiser says that Portland State, as a public institution, doesn't hire people without a search. As I said earlier, I didn't interrupt you, sir. Would you please let me speak? It isn't common at Portland State to hire people without a search. However, this has nothing to do with Portland State being a public institution or not. At University of California, Berkeley, it's done about as often as it's done at Stanford. It has to do with what kind of public institution Portland State wants to be. Now, it's my understanding that over the last decade or more, Portland State has been making a big push to improve its profile and to expand beyond being a local public institution. Under those circumstances, it would be a pretty good strategy to hire people, senior people, in this way. Not all the time, that's excessive, but when it's appropriate in positions that the institution thinks are key for its core interests.
Dean Kaiser, do you want to respond?
Yes, we have consistently tried to do outside searches, and I use the word in the main, because there are instances, for instance, of spousal hires, some of those kinds of things that we certainly explore. But I'm very proud of the record that we have of building an institution that is increasing in its reputation as both a teaching and a research institution by doing an open process in which we search for people. So I'm not if this is an attribute or a tribute to Portland State that because we don't avoid the open process that we're not building ourselves the way we can. I don't buy into that.
Dean Kaiser, the allegations that have been written about in Willamette Week and that you are now hearing again firsthand by Dr. Bainan are quite serious, you would agree. In light of the seriousness of these allegations, do you not think they warrant an independent investigation at Portland State University?
Independent investigation of what? I mean, I'm not quite clear.
Well, Dean Kaiser, to get back to an earlier point, you had said you weren't aware of these statements, and yet Dr. Bainan just pointed out that he was... that you were copied on an email message from Professor Luckett precisely regarding these. You were sent the message and Dr. Bainan was copied. So you were aware of at least these concerns had been raised by one of the professors involved in the hiring process.
I went directly as a responsible person to the individual who... whom these comments were suggested that were inappropriate, that is, the head of Judaic Studies program. That's my responsibility as the dean. I do not know that when this email was written to me by the head of the department, whether or not they had gone to Michael Weingrad. I went to him directly and asked him, can you please talk to me about what occurred? I have a long history with Michael Weingrad. I have a history with him about issues of and we talk about it around academic freedom. He has been the most enlightened about that. He understands that. He understands that there are some contentious issues, and he's been consistent with me over the years. So simply to say, well, this is one interpretation or this is another interpretation, I went to the source, and I received what I believe to be, based on both on the history of working with him and my own trust of him over this, that when he explained to me what he did, I have no reason to believe otherwise.
Dean Kaiser, let me get back to the issue of whether or not there should be an investigation. You have a well-respected candidate who claims that he was politically vetted. You now have specific information about what statements were made that everybody would agree are highly inappropriate. That being the case, shouldn't Portland State University start the process of an independent investigation into these statements, the conduct of the individuals involved, as well as yourself?
I have absolutely nothing to hide, and neither does Portland State. As I said earlier, we're very proud of our process. We have no one has been part of trying to vet people politically that I am aware of. Certainly this office is not. And anyone that from the outside who may have ever talked to me, I always start the conversation, and they repeat that back to me. We're about academic freedom. When you hire people, this is up to you as an institution.
And I need to remind our listeners that they're tuned to One Land, Many Voices, listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge. And you are listening. We're very fortunate to have on the phone from his office at Portland State University, Dean Marvin Kaiser, and in the studio with us, Professor Joel Bainan of Stanford University. Professor Bainan, you wanted to respond.
Yes. Dean Kaiser says that after he was informed that there were concerns about improprieties regarding what Michael Weingrad said to me, that he went to Michael Weingrad and inquired about it. That's perfectly correct, and I don't think anybody would say that that wasn't a good thing to do. But since I was not the one who raised the question of something improper having happened, did Dean Kaiser go to the person or persons who did raise the question and ask them what had happened and ask why in the first place? The history department or the search committee of the history department was concerned that something improper had happened?
Dean Kaiser.
Yes, I did go. I also talked to the individual who was at the breakfast that morning about their perception of the of the meeting. So I went to the various individuals.
So then you know that there are at least two competing versions of the story. How are you going to decide which one is correct?
Well, I'm sorry. Who am I responding?
That was Joel Bainan.
Yeah, Joel. No, I do not. I do not know that there are competing stories, because of both of the people I talked to, it was not clear that there were inappropriate questions asked. I'm sorry to say that, because as I told Hala when she called me, I'm not interested in he said, she said, conversation.
Isn't that precisely the reason you need an investigation by some dispassionate body or an individual who can look into and decide, rather than it's dismiss it as a he said, she said situation or a he said situation, that you can actually get to the root of the problem and figure out what actually happened and whether or not there was an inappropriate turn taken in this interview process?
As I said, I have nothing to hide, and the university has nothing to hide. So I'm certainly open to any conversation, and I would be I'd be pleased to be part of any conversations.
Dean Kaiser, just to move to a little bit higher level of abstraction, I actually do a lot of hiring for the company that I work for. I've been involved in the hiring process, not making hiring decisions, but the interview process. What has been emphasized over and over again in that situation is just how delicate one has to be and how careful one has to be in terms of the sort of questions that are appropriate or inappropriate. And I wonder if, the role you play in many ways in setting the tone for this kind of process, does PSU have a policy in which it's not simply a matter of splitting hairs about whether something is inappropriate, but for example, another benchmark might be how do we avoid the appearance of impropriety? Again, my own personal view is that it is especially important in cases where you have a controversial professor who has often been attacked in a most unfair manner. That in those cases, it is especially important to avoid an appearance of impropriety, even the appearance of impropriety. What does PSU try to do in order to establish that as the essentially the kind of code of conduct for conducting these kinds of interviews?
Well, two things. One is, first, one of the reasons why we do open searches is to deal with that first up front, that we are going to by university policy cast our net as wide as we can in the hiring candidates. That's number one. Number two, we have a training process here within the university for any search that we conduct, that the people who lead the search or the departments who lead the search, that they are required to go through a training process to deal with exactly what you talked about, Will.
Yeah.
We understand exactly what you're talking about, the sensitivity of many positions and a question of openness and fairness, and particularly, anything that may border on questions of impropriety, we attempt to address those all up front in our preparation.
Dean Kaiser, I'm afraid we're down to the last couple of minutes. Do you have any closing comments for us this morning?
Yes, I want to first say that in my recollection, immediately after the meeting with Dr. Bynum, I had noticed right before he came in that he had been at breakfast or had a breakfast appointment with the head of Judaic Studies program. I had no knowledge of any of the how that had gotten set up or any of the content or anything of that. When I noted that he had breakfast, my recollection of the conversation was that I said, and I assumed that went well, Dr. Bynum indicated otherwise. And I let it drop at that moment because then I was going, I said, there's something I need to follow up on, which I did. That was the nature of the conversation. Nowhere in my recollection did I ever say that whatever the interpretation of the breakfast was, that was appropriate.
Dean Kaiser, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Joel, any closing thoughts?
Yes. First of all, the breakfast did go well. I never said the breakfast didn't go well. I said that I had been politically vetted, and Dean Kaiser said, of course. Secondly, there's a whole set of broader issues here about which Dean Kaiser is being less than forthcoming, shall we say. There is now a record that goes back about a year of claims that Portland State University, and in particular Dean Kaiser, have behaved improperly with regard to matters relating to the possibility of my joining the faculty. Dean Kaiser claims that there is no problem, even though all these people are saying that there is. I clearly wanted to work at Portland State, otherwise I wouldn't have given the go-ahead a year ago and applied a second time. So it doesn't make any sense to think that I simply blew up the possibility of my wanting to work at Portland State on a whim. So it seems to me that there are, indeed, a lot of unanswered questions here. And if Portland State wants to maintain its reputation for integrity, it needs to do a little bit more than it has done up until this point to try to figure out exactly what happened and exactly why it is that I felt it necessary to withdraw from the search.
And unfortunately, we are over time, and we're going to have to leave some of those questions unanswered. I want to thank our guests again, Dean Marvin Kaiser. Thank you so much for joining us, and Professor Joel Bainan of Stanford University. Thank you, and thank you, Hala.
Thank you, Will.
And good morning, and thank you for listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Community Radio. Thank you.